Charlotte Talks has covered a lot of ground just this year: presidential politics, healthcare, the funding crisis in the arts community, the economy, and much more. You come to us to be informed, and right now, WFAE is coming to you for your financial support during our spring membership campaign. Hit the donate button on the WFAE app or online at WFAE.org. You can also call us at 704-549-9000, and thanks so much for your support.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Americans pay more for health care than any other industrialized nation, and our outcomes aren't as good. That's one of the bones of contention in the healthcare debate we've been having in this country for decades. That debate is continuing through the Democratic presidential primaries. Almost all the candidates have said something about healthcare.
Guaranteeing healthcare to all people as a human right through a Medicare for all single-payer system.
I restore Obamacare, all the cuts, and add a public option, Medicare-like option for those who want it. And those who can't afford it automatically would be enrolled.
And, of course, Republicans, including Donald Trump, have been trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act and replace it with something as yet unknown but promised to be better than what we have and cheaper.
We are going to give you the best health care you've ever seen.
Dr. Marty McCary isn't holding his breath for a political solution. He's a New York Times bestselling author and Johns Hopkins surgeon and professor of health policy, who set out to better understand average Americans' experience with health care and why we pay so much. The result is his book, The Price We Pay: What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. We thought that would be something worth discussing, so we invited Dr. McCary to join us, and he accepted, and he is here now. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you, Mike.
So you're a medical doctor. You teach health policy. Why did you feel the need to travel the country to see what American medicine looks like on the ground? Why don't you know this from your own professional interaction with patients and the like?
Well, I love being a doc, Mike. I mean, it's the greatest job in the world. I think anyone who works in a hospital, nursing, physical therapy, even the business of medicine, people go into healthcare for good reasons. Okay, we've got good people, but we've got good people working in a bad system. Right now in America, the story that no one is talking about, that we need to talk about, is that the money games, the predatory billing and price gouging threaten the great public trust in the medical profession. And honestly, when I go to these medical conferences and listen to the medical experts, I see people who are disconnected. They're disconnected from the front lines of medicine. And that's why I said, look, costs are out of control. I had watched the movie The Big Short, which explained the banking industry to anyone could understand that at any educational level, using stories and making it relatable. And I thought, I want to explain the business of medicine to create mass healthcare literacy for all. And so that's why I decided to talk to patients, travel the country, meet with executives, middlemen, insurance, everybody.
Yeah.
And that was the journey.
You visited 22 cities. As you said, you talked with hospital executives and insurance company officials and policymakers, doctors, nurses, and you talked to patients, too. Was there a theme that ran through those conversations, or did you get a different feeling about medicine and the medical industry from each of those groups?
Well, I would say, ultimately, the reason healthcare costs are so high from all the research and journalism I did was three things. Number one, middlemen. Number two, pricing failures. And number three, inappropriate care. But I was also, in the end, very encouraged by all of the efforts to address these things. And so I left optimistic that even though things might get a little worse before they get better, the movement to restore medicine to its mission is alive and well. You know, when American hospitals were built, most by churches, by the way, they were there for their communities. They were funded by their communities. They were supported by philanthropy and charity. And these hospitals had a charter dedicating them to serve, quote unquote, the sick and injured, regardless of one's race, creed, or ability to pay. That is our great medical heritage. And the mission to restore that right now is very exciting, and that was a real privilege to be up front and close to that.
Take money and how we pay for things out of the equation, because when we talk about healthcare and we talk about the need to bring costs under control, they always bring up the fact that we are the only industrialized nation without universal health coverage. You go to a hospital or you need treatment in Canada or England or France or Germany, you go, you don't pay anything, it's taken care of. Obviously, you're paying in taxes. So take the money out of this. Our outcomes, despite the fact that we pay more than everybody else, are not as good as everybody else's. We're way down the list. So from a doctor's point of view, where are we? Why are our outcomes different, and are they really that different? Are we really getting substandard health care?
Well, our issue is access and equity in health care. And look, our best health care in the United States is the best in the world. If you're going to be shot in the left ventricle of the heart, you want to be in a U.S. city by one of our great American hospitals, okay? But when you've got abdominal pain and no one can figure it out, sometimes we don't know what to do. Our billing throughput model, that's our broken primary care model. Our billing throughput model is entirely disastrous. And what I've learned is that there's a new series of clinics popping up around the country that are saying, hey, we want relationship-based medicine, no billing, spending time with patients, treating gut problems with whole foods instead of antibiotics, maybe using yoga for joint problems and teaching cooking classes for patients with diabetes. And I think you're seeing an exciting movement of people saying, hey, look at sugar and it's linked to heart disease. And maybe we can treat back pain with physical therapy and ice instead of surgery and opioids.
So what I'm hearing you say is that we have great machinery we have great technical expertise. So if you're shot or you need an emergency appendectomy or a heart valve replacement, we got you covered here. We can do it. We can do it better than anybody else. But when it comes to general health, the things that may over time make us sicker if we don't pay attention to it, we are kind of at a loss. And that's why our healthcare, when it's described, when we hear that we have worse outcomes than the rest of the world, it's because of that?
Yeah, I think it's because of two things, Mike. So number one, it's the access disparity that is getting to that great quality care. And number two, it's our crisis of appropriateness. Now, this crisis of appropriateness is often rooted with good intentions, but it just ends up in a very ugly system where one in five medical services is unnecessary, according to a national survey of physicians that we conducted at Johns Hopkins. So when you have any industry with 21% of everything that it does being unnecessary, we have a crisis of appropriateness. After all, isn't the opioid crisis one manifestation of our crisis of overtreatment? So, in med school, Mike, we were taught to memorize a diagnosis and a treatment, diagnosis, treatment. And the only way you can memorize all that stuff is to pair things. And you come out of med school almost with a reflex and you lose sight of the fact of, hey, when is it appropriate to treat? We lose the sense of appropriateness. So the movement now to get medicine back to its mission includes this sense of being more precise, being custom tailoring treatments to individuals, and realizing we don't have to use our traditional hammers to treat every condition out there.
So you traveled around the country, 22 cities. You spoke with healthcare providers. You also spoke with patients. And I'm sure that you spoke with some patients who were very happy with the outcomes of their treatments and their insurance options as well. But in the second paragraph of your book, you say you, quote, sat with scores of patients in living rooms, over dinner, at work, and they've shared with me, sometimes through tears, how the business of medicine ruined their lives. Do those people outnumber those who haven't had their lives ruined, or are you spotlighting them because no one should have their lives ruined by the business of medicine?
Look, people are getting crushed out there, Mike. I was traveling and visiting with people in their living rooms and talking to them about their experiences with their doctors and their hospital billing departments, First of all, patients were getting shaken down in a way that was so predatory, it violates the public trust in American medicine. Doctors, many times, had no idea that their patients were being sued and had their minimum wage paycheck as a waitress garnished by the hospital for their services. Now, when I told the doctors this, they were livid. They were angry. They felt something was violated in that great American public trust. So I can tell you, people are getting crushed out there with their medical bills, and it's dishonest, and it's predatory, and there's price gouging, and it's entirely enabled by these pricing failures. You know, it's ironic that American hospitals are the bastion of scientific genius in the United States, but no one can give you a price.
Yeah, we're going to come back and talk about that because I have personal experience with that, as I'm sure most of our listeners do as well. And it's alarming and shocking and wrong. Dr. Marty Makary is our guest. He's a professor of health policy and a surgeon at Johns Hopkins University and the author of The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. We will continue in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Dr. Marty Makary. He is a surgeon and a professor of health policy at Johns Hopkins University. And he's the author of The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It, in which he's pretty critical of what's been going on. But he's also spotlighting areas of the country, doctors, hospital systems, others, who are really trying to fix this. And when we spoke in the last segment, we were talking about people being crushed by the business of medicine, by having their wages garnished because they can't pay these exorbitant hospital bills. And in the break, we were talking about a couple of websites that you can go to see what procedures cost. And you mentioned mdsave.com, on which one doctor said this MRI costs $5,000, but if you but the hospital is listing it as $500 on mdsave.com. And I asked you in the break, does that mean if you don't know that they actually offer this for $500, they will charge you and you will be expected to pay $5,000? And you said yes. That, to me, is morally wrong. Is it?
It's not only wrong, it's incredibly predatory because this is done at a time when people are vulnerable. People are coming to our hospitals in America when they're sick and injured and coming to doctors because we take care of anybody who walks in. So this type of billing is predatory. Now, it's ironic that this person told me, hey, our hospital charges $5,000 for the scan, but go to mdsave.com and you'll see it for $500. That's because hospitals are forced to be competitive on that online platform. And there's a lot of those. There's GoodRx for picking up your medications, right, your drugs. So there's a lot of good stuff happening right now. We just need people to be informed, to have basic healthcare literacy, and to ask the right questions.
We keep being told that medicine is a business. And, of course, if you're a hospital and you got to buy these expensive pieces of equipment and you got to have buildings and you got to have staff, et cetera, you have to make money. You may be a nonprofit organization, but you have to pay for the stuff that you have. And doctors have to make money. Nurses have to make money. Orderlies have to have a salary. So it almost sounds un-American, given our capitalist system, to question whether medicine should be a business. But I'll ask you, should it be?
Well, I think people should make a profit, and I think people should be rewarded for their hard work. Doctors should be paid. But what's happening right now is pure price gouging. Look, if airlines did not have to give you a price and they would charge you after the flight, guess what? They would price gouge. Okay. If you went on Expedia or Travelocity and there were no prices and the airlines argued, oh, we can't give you a price. We don't know if you're going to have a delay or a cancellation or heck, you might consume a beverage on your flight. And then people were getting hit with $5,000 and $20,000 bills after short flights. We would say that price gouging is entirely enabled by this lack of showing prices. And that's the cool thing about this new movement.
Yeah.
And we need people to ask. I mean, there's a surgery center in Oklahoma that lists their prices on their website by the procedure, not in some crazy code. And it's the same price for insurance or individuals. And guess what? People are flocking to this place.
Well, why do we do it this way? I mean, we've had a lot of conversations on transparency with regard to medical hospital procedures, et cetera, and the hospital systems here have allegedly posted a lot of their prices online so you can shop around. I found that difficult to do. But if you go into any other business, I need to buy a computer today. I need to buy a pair of shoes today. I need to buy a carton of soft drinks at the grocery store today. I know what I'm going to pay, and it's really almost, until recently, it's been nearly impossible to know what you're going to pay for a procedure, and doctors don't know what it costs the patients. Why? How did that happen?
Well, first of all, when hospitals say, oh, we post our prices, those are not real prices. Those are crazy inflated prices that are designed for secret insurance discounts. They are not honest prices. I believe as a doctor, we need to get back to honesty in medicine. The second problem is those prices are in some crazy code language. Okay, people just want to know, if I'm going to deliver my baby, what's it going to cost me, assuming it's a vaginal delivery? Or if it ends up being a C-section without complications, what is that price? 60% of all medical care is entirely predictable and shoppable. So we should know what a knee replacement costs, a laparoscopic hysterectomy costs. And so,
But why do we do it this way? I mean, I understand marking your prices way up because insurance company will bargain them down. But why?
But
why
first
do it
of all,
that way?
That we've inherited this crazy game. Okay, the many hospital leaders I've met around North Carolina, all over, they are good people. Hospital executives at insurance companies, they're good people, but they're just living in the status quo. And enough people now are saying, hey, I don't want to just collect my paycheck every 2 weeks and be a part of this crazy game. We need to shake it up. We need to mix it up. People are getting crushed.
Well, you keep saying that they're good people, and you say in the book, we don't have malicious leaders in healthcare. We have good leaders working in a fragmented system. What does that mean?
So if you look historically, hospitals have never needed to provide a price, right? And so all of a sudden now the costs are so high that insurance companies say, well, we just got to increase deductibles. By the way, that's not real reform. That's just passing on costs, right? And now the people are engaged and they're like, wow, I'm spending a ton of money on healthcare. I would like to see the prices. Hospitals have never had to do it before, so it's new for them. And then on top of that, they've been asked to do all these regulatory requirements and manage their hospitals and do all kinds of stuff. And so they've been busy, and it takes time to actually itemize services and figure it out.
I think it's in your book. It may have been an article that I read. I can't remember that some physician practices spend $40,000 a year per physician dealing with the paperwork.
There are hospitals in America where there are as many coders, negotiators for contracts, and billers as there are beds in the hospital. We're spending up to 30% of everything in healthcare on things that have nothing to do with patient care. Some of these practices are so egregious, and they've developed a mind of their own. They've become a monster, that hospitals sometimes sue patients and garnish their wages, and the hospital leaders themselves don't even know about it. The reason I can tell you that is I tell them, hey, my research shows that your hospital has sued 25,000 people in your town of 28,000 people to garnish their paychecks. That's a real story in the book. That hospital announced after we put pressure on them, and I brought NPR to town, that they're going to stop suing patients. Now, are they evil people? Honestly, they're disconnected. It's not that they're bad. They were disconnected. And on the ground, healthcare is getting uglier and uglier. Hmm. So I think we need to appeal to the best in people.
Some people might explain away some of these costs, if they haven't read your book, by saying that it goes to hospital administrators and the millions of dollars in salary that those administrators make, or to help doctors pay for their country club memberships and their million-dollar homes and their BMWs. Your colleagues at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health say that Americans pay more for health care mainly due, quote, to higher drug prices, higher salaries for doctors and nurses, higher hospital administration costs, and higher prices for many medical services. Do you agree?
Well, Well, higher prices, yes, but no, I do not agree that the doctors and nurses are making more money. I strongly disagree. Look at the salary of doctors and nurses. They've been relatively stagnant for the last 20 to 30 years. Meanwhile, hospitals are recording record profits. Okay, large hospitals in America are on track for their largest profit margin in history, 5.1%. At the same time, small and rural hospitals are closing.
Where is that money going? And where is it coming from? Higher prices for procedures? And where is it going?
Higher prices, and then these nonprofit hospitals that pay no taxes have to spend it. So they buy new buildings and real estate and outbid every grandmother out there that wants a new home.
And what are we, what are you the doctors, and what are we the patients getting for that?
You're getting a system that now consumes not only $18,000 of a household income through insurance premiums, but 48% of your federal taxes, of all federal spending, goes to healthcare in all of its hidden forms. If you make $52,000 a year, you're spending about $22,000 on healthcare through your taxes that go to healthcare and through your insurance. If you make $250,000 a year, you're spending $59,000 a year on healthcare without even using the system. That just comes from your taxes that go to healthcare and from your health insurance costs.
Well, then I understand that these hospitals, many of them are nonprofit. So you got to spend the money because you can't have a profit. You got to spend it. So they buy real estate, and they build buildings, and they buy expensive equipment, et cetera, et cetera. But if we're not getting anything out of this, what has to happen to change that model?
Well, first of all, I'm not convinced that they need to be nonprofit. They can pay, you know, they'll tell me, we're struggling to get by. Well, guess what? Taxes work this way. You only pay on the profit. Okay, so if you're struggling, if you're in the red, you don't have to pay taxes. I personally think American hospitals are the darling of American communities, and they have an incredible heritage. But if a hospital is suing its low-income patients to garnish its wages, if it's sending out bills that are not itemized, if it has a call center where they won't have a civil conversation with somebody who's been overcharged, they should not be tax exempt. And I feel strongly about that. And I think right now people need to create community and public accountability. We go to hospital board members, if the executives won't talk to us, through our RestoringMedicine.org movement. And we'll contact even donors to the hospital and say, do you know this is going on? We want honest health care at every level, from bedside care to honest billing practices. Billing quality is medical quality. And financial toxicity is a medical complication.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that perhaps your colleagues, fellow doctors, nurses, people on the front lines would agree with you. What do the hospital administrators say? Because they're making a lot of money, these people.
Well, I think publicly they're silent. Privately, they all come up to me and talk to me, and they say, Marty, we're part of a crazy game. I didn't realize that this game works like this when I chose hospital administration when I was in business school. I thought I was going to help people. Keep doing what you're doing. We need public accountability.
That game that you referred to, you call it money games of medicine, loaded with middlemen, kickbacks, and hidden costs.
You know,
who are the middlemen? The drug reps and the machinery reps, and who are the middlemen?
Well, first of all, Mike, I wrote the book to create healthcare literacy so everybody can understand these games and navigate around it. And there's a lot of good stuff and bright stuff happening. And I think I'm very optimistic in the end. But to be very clear, pharmacy benefit managers, group purchasing organizations that sell drugs and devices to hospitals, you know, hospitals don't buy directly from manufacturers that much anymore. And they buy through these middlemen. Well, the middlemen, the GPOs, the group purchasers, and the pharmacy plans take kickbacks from the pharmacy companies and from the manufacturers. I couldn't believe this when I learned about this in the research. And I actually looked into it and I thought, this violates the United States anti-kickback provisions. But it turns out that this industry got its own exemption passed by Congress in 1987 called the Safe Harbor, exempting them from these anti-kickback statutes. And that's why drugs cost so much sometimes. When insulin cost $20 30 years ago, and now it's $200, guess what's happening?
Yeah.
The middlemen are asking for a kickback from the pharma company, and the pharma company just prices that into the price of the drug.
So we have about a minute left in this segment, and one of the things that we've talked about off the air is that 20% of all medical procedures performed in this country on a yearly basis are unnecessary, and that includes testing, because you write about testing. There's testing and there's over-testing. And where do you draw the line? How do you know that the doctor is ordering too many tests because he wants to be careful and err on the side of caution versus this is a way to increase billing?
Well, we asked doctors what drives this 20% of medical care that they reported as unnecessary in a national survey of over 2,000 doctors. This is their number. It's not our estimate. Mm-hmm. This comes from the voice of doctors nationally. And they said, look, it's 25% of diagnostic testing that's unnecessary, 22% of medications, and 11% of medical procedures they believe are unnecessary. And they say a lot of it's the consumerist culture, people coming in demanding antibiotics for their kids with a little virus. It's concerns of the malpractice situation. It's also the perverse incentives that are set up in the marketplace, right, that we get paid more for quantity and not quality as doctors, and that's wrong. It's out of control. It may make sense for a radiologist to be paid on volume, but for a surgeon to have monthly quotas like a used car salesman. So this is the system that's being disrupted. Anyone over 65 should ask about relationship-based clinics like Iora and ChenMed and these new clinics that are doing relationship-based medicine and throwing billing out the window.
Dr. Marty McCary is our guest. His book is called The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. When we come back, how to fix it. That's what we'll talk about. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. I'm Mike Collins. Join me for a special conversation with best-selling author Kathy Reichs, live from 7th Street Public Market in Uptown Charlotte this Thursday at 9. Details at WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the high cost of American healthcare and how to fix it. As a matter of fact, we're talking with a doctor who wrote the book on it, Dr. Marty McCary, The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. He's a surgeon and a professor of health policy at Johns Hopkins University. Off the air, once again, we were talking about tests. Just before the break, we were talking about tests and how sometimes an overabundance of tests are prescribed, and sometimes it's to increase billing. Sometimes it's people who need these tests, and sometimes it's because doctors want to err on the side of caution. But you mentioned in the break a little-known test that you say everybody should have, but doctors don't know about it, and it's the LP little A test. Why should we have it, and how do we know this is just another attempt to increase billing?
You're absolutely right. Everybody should have this test done. It's called LP little A. Even I think in your 20s or 30s, it's worth getting it done because you at least know your future prognostication about early heart attack risk. It's a blood test. You generally only need it done once in your lifetime. You either really express this at high levels or you don't. One in five Americans test high for it, and it predicts heart attacks early. People who have heart attacks when they're 41, 45, 52, early heart attacks oftentimes have this LP little a tested positive. And it's $100. It's a great screening test. It's not the silver bullet. But I think when people come see their doctor, instead of, you know, hyperanalyzing your total triglycerides and things like that, look at your LDL, but also get an LP little a, an apoprotein B, and a C-reactive protein. That'll really show whether or not you're at high risk and will need to go on to aggressive statin therapy and other testing. Because I think in the future, Mike, in 10 years from now, we're going to be talking about health as how inflamed you are. What is your inflammatory state? And, a lot of that inflammatory state is driven by the microbiome. It's what we eat. It's a lot of factors. And we got to take care of our microbiomes, you know, that equilibrium of bacteria that live in our gut. When kids come in with a little sniffles and they get antibiotics, that is harming the microbiome. When people have some acne and they're given Accutane for 6 months, that's messing up the microbiome. So, look, antibiotics save lives. I've seen it, and sometimes you need to take them. But this sort of frivolous use of antibiotics and other things, you know, drinking cow's milk 4 glasses a day, where the heck did that recommendation come from? It came from the food industry. Avoid saturated fat. That's also a false recommendation. There's no link between saturated fat or healthy fats and heart disease. We need to watch out for sugar. We need to watch out for processed foods and things that mess up the microbiome. Those are the things that predict inflammation.
Wow.
And there's a whole host of diseases that have cropped up from inflammation. How about inflammatory bowel disease? How about all these arthritis cases and some allergic conditions? These are inflammatory-based conditions, Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, irritable bowel. They're often related to the microbiome. And we're learning that even the microbiome makes serotonin involved in your mood. So it may be involved with mental health. We need to take care of our microbiome, and I think everyone should get the Lp(a) test.
Okay. I want to talk about the role we play in all of this, we being patients. But first, Mike emails, while going after the inflated and unnecessary costs of healthcare is definitely needed, I find it ironic that the people trying to solve the problem are literally treating the symptom and not the root cause of what ails us. Americans are probably the least healthy group of people in the free world simply because of bad habits. And I seldom hear this issue brought up when healthcare costs are discussed. That actually wraps into what I was going to ask. And that is, how much at fault are we? Because, as we said in the break, pills are prescribed by doctors on a regular basis, even if they're not necessary, because people come into the doctor's office, they don't feel well, give me a pill, I'll take it. I'm not going to exercise, I'm not going to change my diet, give me a pill. That's the case with antibiotics, it's the case with opioids, it's the case with other drugs. What role do we play?
Huge role. I mean, we're realizing that not only have we been over-diagnosing, over-testing, and over-treating to the point where we have the medicalization of ordinary life in America today, but people are coming in demanding stuff, and we got to get rid of this quick impulse pill popping culture.
How much of a role are these television commercials that air all the time about drugs playing in this demand for you to give me a pill? How much of a role? Let's stop there. How much of a
Huge.
Role is that playing?
Oh, it's big.
Why should I ask my doctor if such and such is right for me?
Yeah, I mean, how about fruits and vegetables? How about yoga to treat joint problems? How about cooking classes to treat diabetes? I mean, we need to address some of these underlying issues that nobody's talking about, and that's a huge part of our healthcare spend. People compare us to Europe all the time. Europeans are healthier, okay? Show me an obese European. I mean, they're rare, okay? And so we've got to address the lifestyle issues, and that's the exciting thing that I learned about in doing the research for the book, is this mass trend towards lifestyle medicine, relationship-based clinics, and doctors saying, we want to get off the treadmill of this billing throughput crazy game that we're put on, and we want to practice medicine the way it was intended.
So where do you find these places? Where does a person in Charlotte find a relationship-based clinic?
Well, they're called Chen Med, Gen Care, Oak Street, Iora, and Landmark. And if you're over 65, you sign up for one of those. If you're under 65, oftentimes they come in the form of direct primary care or even sometimes concierge medicine, although that can cost a little more. But doctors are saying, look, we're sick of the primary care model. It's broken. We want to practice medicine the way it was intended.
But are these places available nationwide?
Well, the clinics I listed, you can just sign on if you have Medicare, and Medicare Advantage will often just let you do that type of care instead of the traditional model, because Medicare Advantage has learned they're going to save money. Medicare is going to save money if your doctor spends time building a relationship and has you in a program and is proactive about your health. I mean, these clinics want to know if you're thinking about going to the hospital. They check in with you. Yeah. And they might intercept you and say, you don't need to sit in the emergency room for 12 hours in a broom closet.
This is a new concept to me, and I'm sure to a lot of listeners. So are these physical clinics? They're located in places, or are these online clinics where you have a relationship online with somebody who's a physician?
No.
What are they?
They're local. They're physical clinics. They're buildings. They're being built all across America. They're growing like wildfire. People love them. The Net Promoter Score, if you're familiar with that measure of satisfaction, is over 90%, okay. Whereas typically it's 19%.
So if our listeners wanted to find one of these places in this region, what would they do?
So check out the websites of ChenMed, Iora, Oak Street, GenCare, Landmark, if you're over 65. If you're under 65, ask about direct primary care and relationship-based medicine, including some of the concierge practices.
Okay. Let me see. Where do we want to go with this? Why do prices from city to city, from hospital to hospital system, why do they vary so much? And why has there been no connection between the Cadillac care that you might get if you pay more and quality? Because just because you pay more doesn't mean you're going to have a better outcome.
You know, if you want to deliver a baby in one of the major cities I studied for the book, The Price We Pay, the price you're going to get quoted for that baby delivery, not just the sticker price, but what your insurance will actually pay and what your co-pays and deductibles are based off of, ranges from $70,000 to $4,000. Now, if you're an employer, don't you want your employees to go to the $4,000 hospital if the quality is just as good?
Yes.
You better believe it, right? Half of large businesses are self-insured, they're self-funding insurance, they're self-funding their medical care for their employees. So one employer I met did something pretty cool. He said, look, I want the women who deliver in my business to go to the high-quality, cheaper hospital, the $4,000 hospital, but I don't want to tell them where they can and can't go. So I want to give them choice. But I tell you what, if anyone delivers at the $4,000 hospital, I'm going to pay for free diapers and wipes for a year. And guess where everybody went? And he saved millions. I mean, this is the kind of value of price transparency when we have surrogate proxy shoppers for healthcare.
In the course of your travels around America and in writing this book, you track down people and companies, some of which we've talked about, who are working to change things, to lower costs and help people gain access to better, high-quality healthcare, which is all nice, but this is like a cottage thing. It's a fragmented system where there are people here and there and little pockets around the country trying to make things better. Don't we need an overall fix nationwide, 50 states, every city, every county, to make this really work to lower healthcare costs? Can it be piecemeal?
There's a lot of things the government can do, but to be honest with you, I've got no faith in our policymakers. And most of them are bought by all these giant stakeholders. Everyone's making a lot of money, except for one stakeholder, the patient. And so I am not relying on the government. Sure, I meet with Trump and I meet with, members on the Hill, and I'll meet with any policymaker who wants to hear what I think about how we fix healthcare and price transparency. By the way, the Trump administration and Secretary Azar have done more on this topic than any other administration in history, requiring all hospitals to disclose charge master prices, and now an executive order very recently to require disclosure of the secret negotiated insurance discounts. It got no coverage in the media, but there's a lot of stuff happening. But I'm not relying on the government. I'm relying on businesses, like one North Carolina business I highlight in the book, that actually said, hey, I want to get a better deal on health insurance. My brokers are getting paid kickbacks and commissions. I want an honest fiduciary. And people are saving millions on their pharmacy plans and insurance by going with better healthcare advisors, consultants, brokers, and companies.
That takes a lot of time. Does the average person have the time and the expertise to do that?
Well, I think if you were told, hey, this one advisor to your company who's advising on healthcare benefits and pharmacy benefits is getting paid on the back end and takes 5% of all your health insurance premium dollars as commission. And here's another broker who doesn't. Which one do you think is the independent fiduciary? And of course, the independent ones are starting to rise up and say, this is what I do. This is what we do well, and we're going to give you good advice.
So in the middle, the minute we have left, doctors have to get involved in this. Hospitals have to get involved in this. People, patients have to get involved in this. And you write that one place to start is for us to ask for the price for every single medical service we are considering. So quickly, what do you do when your doctor doesn't know the price? If you're going to go for procedure, can you ever get a firm bottom line cost estimate before it happens? And what do you do if you can't afford the bottom line price?
Well, first of all, when nutrition labels were being debated, Americans wanted to know the ingredients with honesty in their food that they bought. And the industry said, we can't do that. Okay. Once we got it, all of a sudden, guess what? Food is competing on their nutritional value. They're even boasting to you that they have no added sugar. Okay, we created a level playing field for a market to work. I know doctors who are now saying, you know, I had to find out the price of the procedure, all things included, because enough people were asking. If people ask, the market will deliver. If people ask, the politicians will follow and respond to that demand. So we need people to address these three issues that nobody is talking about that we have to start talking about in healthcare. The underlying reasons healthcare costs so much, and that is number one, middlemen, number two, pricing failures, and number three, inappropriate care.
Dr. Marty Makary, he is at Johns Hopkins University Hospital System. He's a surgeon there and a professor of public health policy, and he's the author of The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare, and How to Fix It. Thank you for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.